are you with Truth News Radio, and it is the 13th of November 2013, and I'm your host, Herewood Fenton, here with you for the next 2 hours. We've got a really action-packed show lined up for you today, folks. I've got, in the second hour, a very, very important guest coming on board. Whistleblower from the World Bank, Karen Hudez. She worked at the World Bank for over 20 years. She was senior counsel there. She is part of a global network of whistleblowers who are trying to bring accountability to the World Bank and the sort of shadowy cartel of banking elites that are basically controlling the world. Karen has an amazing reach. She knows a lot about what's going on, and she claims that she is actually doing a lot constructively to help to fix the situation. She was fired from her job at the World Bank, but she currently works with a group of whistleblowers, many of whom are still with the bank or with other institutions, and she is trying to bring accountability. She is also talking about the larger systemic problems with the monetary system, and the importance of alternate currencies, and particularly gold, which she believes needs to be legalized as a form of alternate currency around the world. She also has some rather startling information about the Jesuit order and the Vatican's control of world affairs. All stuff that's a little bit outside my ken in some ways, I have to say. It's certainly unusual to have someone of her stature and background coming forward and saying these things. So I do hope you stay with us for the second hour. It's going to be quite a tour de force, and I'd be very interested to know your feedback, and welcome any comments that you may have upon listening to that interview in the second hour. Now, I've got some material to run through with you in the first hour of today's show. I've got a number of video clips I want to play to you. We're heading towards the anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. It'll be the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination, and I do hope to be getting a guest on the show within the next few weeks who's going to be talking about some very important material. But I won't preempt that. I'll just say for now that it is scheduled, and we do have the person locked in. So that is going to be a very, very important interview I'm going to be doing in a couple of weeks. But I want to continue from last week, where I was talking about the general background of the Kennedy assassination and how important it is as a kind of a template to help us understand the current global situation. Because really, in many ways, the assassination of Kennedy and the cover-up and the use of patsies and the manipulation of public opinion really is a type of a template which has been used repeatedly over history. And, you know, we have with the Kennedy assassination this stark divergence between what is known as the official narrative and what most people believe. And what's really interesting, though, is that with the Kennedy assassination, we have a whole generation of people who grew up with that, who have continued to be conspiracy theorists within that sphere, but who cannot see the elephant in the room with regard to 9/11, for example. They simply can't see it. And I find that quite bizarre. I don't know whether we're dealing here with just a bizarre facet of human psychology. It's the old cognitive dissonance still at work. Well, it's hard to believe when people have been confronted with something as deeply nefarious as the Kennedy assassination. Their unwillingness to look at the obvious parallels between the way 9/11 was executed. I'm not saying the direct parallels. Obviously, it's quite different. But the underlying template is what I'm talking about, the underlying pattern of having, obviously, an agenda. Kennedy had to be removed because there was an agenda at work. You had the culprit, you had the perpetrator prepared and groomed in advance to be the demonized person, and you had all of the news agencies ready to go with the story. You had techniques of repetition in the media, particularly with television, to tell people over and over again who the assassin was, who the bad person was. And of course, you had then the following through of a predetermined agenda, which in the case of Kennedy really was, in my understanding, the Vietnam War and a whole lot of other changes. And sometimes not even changes, simply business as usual that Kennedy had been trying to dismantle. Because, of course, he did remove John Dulles from the head of the CIA. And that was considered an unforgivable affront. And he did have a huge enmity with Lyndon B. Johnson, who helped him to win the presidency, but for which there was a great deal of enmity and suspicion. And of course, Johnson's connections with organized crime have been well established. Now, I want to play to you a clip that I kind of stumbled upon in my musings, in my Google surfing. It's actually a clip from the DA from New Orleans, Jim Garrison, who, of course, is one of the central figures in the whole JFK conspiracy saga, and, of course, was the central character in the Oliver Stone film JFK. I found watching this for the first time quite enlightening, because this man, who was part of the establishment, a district attorney, clearly realized that he had come up against a deep, dark enemy within the fabric of American society. And, he was one of these people who stood up to it. I mean, so rare. But it's so important to see examples of that. And I think it's very important to listen to people like this firsthand, because we typically only get the stories, or we get the Hollywood version of these people. And, you've got to realize that that in the real world, there are people who stand up against tyranny. And sometimes it's actually from within the establishment. Sometimes it's people who have vested interests, who've got a lot to lose, like Jim Garrison did. And, of course, his reputation was destroyed by what he did. He suffered greatly from what he did. But he recognized there was a fundamental question here, a fundamental principle that he had to stand up for. Now, I don't totally agree with his analysis here that this was all about Cuba. I do believe Cuba was important, but more hindsight and more knowledge of history shows us that the CIA had a lot more reasons to be needing to remove Kennedy than simply the failures over Cuba, although they were highly significant. What we're really talking about here is the unfolding of the global New World Order, which Kennedy was somewhat holding back, and Kennedy was really a leader who was championing peace. He was threatening the entrenched power of the parasitic oligarchy, and of course he had to be taken out in order for them to continue. And did they ever continue? Boy, I mean, look at what happened. Look at what happened in the wake of that. And decade after decade. But anyway, let me play to you now some of this video. It was a broadcast on television, I believe on NBC, of Jim Garrison talking about the case. It's from 1967, and Jim Garrison had already experienced a lot of dirty tricks, a lot of attacks on his credibility. He realized what he was up against at this point, but he was still established and still recognized enough to be able to get time on the major networks. And so in some ways, you know, this is a very important testament in history when Jim Garrison came forward on the NBC network to give his perspective on the Kennedy assassination and the prosecution that he was trying to bring that of course went way beyond the claims of the lone gunman theory that the Warren Commission had supported. Now, after I play this clip, I want to actually talk a bit about Oliver Stone, and I want to play to you a very recent interview that Oliver Stone gave on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now. And then I want to have a little look at our Oliver Stone and try and understand this man. And I'm going to play to you another clip from We Are Change, Luke Radowski actually interviewing Oliver Stone about 9/11. It's very interesting. And this is where we get to this curious mental paralysis that seems to take hold in many people of his generation when confronted with the modern-day equivalent of something like the Kennedy assassination. So I'll just kick off this video now. We will be going to break shortly, but I'll continue that after the break as well.
Tonight I'm going to talk to you about truth and about fairy tales, about justice and about injustice. In the months to follow, you're going to learn that many of the things which some of the major news agencies have been telling you are untrue. You're going to learn that although you are citizens of the United States, information concerning the cause of the death of your president has been withheld from you. In the months to come, you will learn to your own satisfaction that President Kennedy was not killed by a lone assassin. You will learn that there has been and continues to be a concerted effort to keep you from learning these facts. And you will learn, I assure you, that what I have been trying to tell you and what I'm telling you tonight is true. As children, we become accustomed to hearing fairy tales. They're always pleasant stories, and they're comforting to hear because good always triumphs over evil. At least, this is the way it is in fairy tales. Fairy tales are not dangerous for our children and are probably even good for them up to a point. However, in the real world in which you and I must live, fairy tales are dangerous. They're dangerous because they're untrue. Anything which is untrue is dangerous.
I'll just pause there. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm playing you a clip here from Jim Garrison, the district attorney from New Orleans, who mounted a prosecution in the wake of the Kennedy assassination, which completely went against the mainstream narrative. We'll be right back after this break. Please stay with us.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, I'm going to continue playing now this clip from Jim Garrison talking about the fairy tale versus the reality about the assassination of Kennedy. Very interesting that he uses the term fairy tale because, you know, this is a way of understanding it that has so many parallels to the cover-ups, to the propaganda that we've seen again and again and again over the 5 decades since the assassination of JFK.
And it is all the more dangerous when the fairy tale becomes accepted as reality simply because it has an official seal of approval, or because honorable men announce that you must believe it, or because powerful elements of the press tell you that the fairy tale is true. The conclusion of the Warren Report that President Kennedy was killed by a lone assassin is a fairy tale. This does not mean that the men on the Warren Commission were aware at the time that their conclusion was totally untrue, nor does it mean necessarily that these men had any sinister motives. It does mean that the conclusion that no conspiracy existed and that Lee Oswald was the lone assassin is a fiction and a myth, and that it should be brought to an end. The people of this country don't have to be protected from the truth. This country was not built on the idea that a handful of nobles, whether located in our federal agencies in Washington, D.C., or in the news agencies in New York, should decide what was good for the people to know and what they should not know. This is a totalitarian concept, which presumes that the leaders of our federal government and the men in control of the powerful press media constitute a special elite, which by virtue of their nobility and their brilliance empower them to think for the people. Personally, I would rather put my confidence in the common sense of the people of this country. The truth about the assassination of the president has been concealed from you long enough. Those forces which are fighting so hard today to tell you that they have examined the Warren Report and that everything is fine and that our investigation has uncovered nothing are not merely going to lose this fight. They have already lost it. Now let me tell you why President Kennedy was murdered and how he was murdered. I also want to give you a few examples which will show you how the conclusion reached by the Warren Commission is totally impossible. President Kennedy was assassinated by men who sought to obtain a radical change in our foreign policy, particularly with regard to Cuba. You recall that under President Kennedy, the Cold War began to thaw, and there were new signs of an effort on the part of the Soviet Union and ourselves to understand each other. On the map, this appears to be merely a large island off the coast of Florida. But for many men, it meant a good deal more than this. In 1963, a great variety of interests existed which not only desired an American-supported invasion of Castro's Cuba, but took it for granted that it was inevitable. In the minds of many men, this island represented a tremendous emotional landmark because they had steered their courses toward it for so long and with such intensity. In the fall of 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis occurred. It was followed by a pronounced new attitude towards Cuba on the part of the United States. Cuba, after this, was no longer regarded as an enemy and was no longer regarded as fair game for those men who, for one reason or another, focused their attention on this island. The new signs of understanding between Russia and the United States continued to develop. In June of 1963, President Kennedy, addressing students at the American University in Washington, told them, "We breathe the same air as the Russians." He said, "We should try to live together in peace on this earth." But at this point, some individuals transferred their hostile attention from Fidel Castro to John F. Kennedy. They planned the president's assassination, and they planned it well. The evidence indicates that he was shot at from 2 different directions in the rear, and also from the right front. We know that shooting was coming from 2 separate directions in the rear because the president and Governor Connally were hit in the back within a split second of each other. And this necessarily had to happen with 2 bullets coming from 2 different rifles. We know that the president was being shot at from the grassy knoll area on the right front, because most of the people in Dealey Plaza heard the shots coming from there, and because at least one of the president's wounds was an entry wound from the front, and because men were seen running from the grassy knoll area immediately after. That's why the idea of Lee Harvey Oswald as the lone assassin of the president is a fairy tale and should be brought to an end. If you, the people of the United States, will learn the truth that the president was assassinated by men who were once connected with the Central Intelligence Agency, of course, this might reflect on the dignity of the CIA. But I happen to believe that our form of government is strong enough to survive the truth. I believe that you are entitled to the truth about how your president was shot down in the street and how it was done. Instead, some of the most powerful news agencies we have in our country have worked hard to convince you that everything is all right. They do not tell you that Lee Harvey Oswald's fingerprints were not found on the gun which was supposed to kill the president. And they do not tell you that nitrate tests exonerated Lee Oswald from the actual shooting by showing that he had not fired a rifle that day. And they do not tell you that it was virtually impossible for Oswald to have taken his fingerprints off the gun, hidden the gun, and gone down four flights of stairs by the time he was seen on the second floor. Above all, they do not tell you of the overwhelming eyewitness testimony that shots were coming from behind the stone wall on the grassy knoll. In a choice between official dignity and the truth, dignity was given priority, and so you have not received the full truth. This is why there continue to be hundreds of documents still hidden from your eyes and classified as secret. And some of them bear such titles as Lee Harvey Oswald's Accessibility to Information about the U-2, the Central Intelligence Agency's Dossier on Lee Harvey Oswald, and the CIA file on Jack Ruby. You have not been told that Lee Oswald was in the employ of United States intelligence agencies, but this was the case, and so I am telling you. Why, this young uneducated man had learned to speak Russian even before he left the Marines. And there's only one way he could have learned that. Oswald had a higher security rating than his buddies in his Marine unit. During 12 hours of questioning, to give you another example, 12 hours of questioning after the assassination, there is no transcript of Oswald's statements available for you to look at. Now, it doesn't matter where you live. If somebody in your town steals a 1928 Hupmobile, what he says is written down when he's questioned. However, when the man who has just killed the President of the United States is questioned for 12 hours, no transcript is available. There's nothing for you to look at. And believe it or not, one of the explanations given is that the room was too small to include a stenographer. And here's something else. This case has more accidental fires, more burning of paper than any murder case in history. For example, when Oswald was questioned by a federal agent in August of 1963, the notes of the interview were later burned. You cannot see the notes made by Commander Humes concerning the president's autopsy because he burned them too. One of the questioners of Lee Harvey Oswald during the 12-hour session burned his notes. And similarly, when the Warren Commission contacted the State Department and said, with regard to Exhibit 948, we noticed that a one-page message from the CIA containing secret information is supposed to be attached to this file. And
you're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm playing you a video here from 1967. Former DA Jim Garrison talking about the Kennedy assassination. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I'm going to continue playing here some of the clip from Jim Garrison. I want to continue until he outlines the famous magic bullet theory, because I think that is very, very important. And there are some aspects of that which are not often properly understood. One of the key factors being the trajectory of the so-called magic bullet, which went through, according to the Warren Commission, which went through two men, JFK and Governor Connally. So I'll continue, and then we'll be shifting to some recent clips, including an interview with Oliver Stone and another impromptu interview with Oliver Stone that was done by We Are Change. So let's continue.
The Warren Commission's inquiry into the assassination started off with a completely unacceptable philosophy for a democracy like ours. One of its stated objectives was to calm the fears of the people about a conspiracy. But in our country, the government has no right to calm our fears any more than it has, for example, the right to excite our fears about Red China or about fluoridation or about birth control or about anything. There's no room in America for thought control of any kind, no matter how benevolent the objective. Personally, I don't want to be calm about the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I don't want to be calm about a president of my country being shot down in the street. And I don't want to be calm about the fact that for reasons of public policy, or national security, or any other phony reason, the true facts have been withheld from the people of this country. If the day has come when it is possible to shoot our president down because some men disagree with his foreign policy, and the day has come that the moment his heart stops beating, other considerations take over which conceal the total truth from the citizens of the United States, then the day has come when we have ceased to be a democracy. I cannot believe that this is so, that the time has come in America when the people no longer control their country. Yet I must confess that I'm appalled by the readiness with which some of the major press media have accepted the great fairy tale without hesitation, rousing from their stupor only when they have learned that a district attorney was violating all the rules of etiquette and digging up the truth. They're telling you that black is white when they tell you there is no evidence of a conspiracy. They have to know well the significance of the continued concealment of x-rays and autopsy pictures, which, if revealed to you, which showed that the president was hit by rifle fire from more than one direction. But they have lent themselves to the all-out effort to convince you that the matter's been looked into, and anyone who raises a question now is irresponsible or a troublemaker or an enemy of the people. What's that? You say that you are an American citizen and you want to see the autopsy x-rays and you want to see these hundreds of documents that have been withheld from your view, and you want to know why these vital notes always ended up being burned? What's the matter with you? Can't you take the word of these honorable men who've looked into it for you? Let me just give you one example that shows you how impossible the single assassination theory is, which shows you the enormity of the fairy tale which you're supposed to believe in. Now, this is the Warren Commission's own diagram of the route of the bullet through Governor Connally. The bullet had to take this route in order to cause the injuries which he received. Now, the important thing to keep in mind is that the Warren Commission itself concedes that if this same bullet was not the one which also went through President Kennedy, then there had to be someone else firing. And the reason for that, just to put it very simply, is the Zapruder films have shown that all the firing occurred in 6 seconds, and yet there were a total of 8 wounds. Therefore, this one bullet has to cause 7 wounds. because one missed and one was the fatal shot hitting the president. So by the Warren Commission's own admission, prior to hitting the governor, this bullet had to go through President Kennedy, who is sitting back here. Now, you'll notice that the Warren Commission did not attempt to include President Kennedy in the diagram. They could not, because the total impossibility of this bullet having gone through the president also would be too obvious. In other words, by the evidence of the Warren Commission itself, it is obvious that there was other shooting going on in Dealey Plaza. Consequently, the Warren Commission has officially concluded that before this bullet came down from the sky, as it had to hit Governor Connally and all those different places, it entered President Kennedy's body from the rear and came out of his neck. I might add that the Warren Commission did not try to include the president's picture because that would have shown that the course of the magic bullet would have had to gone up in the air and come down again in order to end up hitting the governor.
I'll just leave it there. Up in the air and down again is impossible, ladies and gentlemen. Not improbable, impossible. And this is a very important point, because in so many of these cases where there has been an official cover-up, we are kind of cajoled into accepting what seems to be an improbable event. Because, indeed, life is full of improbable events, isn't it? Life is full of strange coincidences, and we're all led to accept that the improbable does indeed occur. But the impossible, ladies and gentlemen, does not occur. A bullet does not go up and then down in the space of a couple of feet. That is a physical impossibility. A bullet flies along a trajectory. It goes up and down over the span of that trajectory, of course, but it does not do a little loop up and down. I know it's silly to even talk about it because it's just so obviously rubbish, but I thought it was worth playing to you that clip there from Jim Garrison. He gets into a lot of material that's extremely important, particularly his recognition that we are dealing with a very powerful totalitarian agenda, elites who are in control of a large part of what is going on in our society, who have incredible power. Now, of course, over the years, there have been so many books, so many films, so many documentaries, so many attempts to bring the truth forward. And, of course, Oliver Stone was one of the pioneers in that. And, of course, his 1992 film, JFK, is a great film. I watched it a couple of years ago for the second time. I did watch it when it came out first. But when I watched it again, I was really impressed with it. I have to say, you know, he did a great job with that film. And I'm going to play to you now a recent clip from Oliver Stone talking to Amy Goodman.
Oliver Stone, let's begin with you as we move into this 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. Your thoughts?
Thank you, Amy, for having me back. It's nice to see you again. Hello, Peter. My thoughts. I saw them film inside these last few days, and I've been able to assess it again, and I followed the cases more or less from the outside. I haven't been inside. It's amazing to me that people still deny it. As you know, I was in the infantry in Vietnam. I had a fair amount of combat experience. I saw people blown away in action. When you look once again at the basics of the film, the bullets, the autopsy, the forensics, the shooting path, and stay away from all the other stuff, Oswald's background, Garrison, etc. Just follow the meat, the evidence, what you see with your own eyes in those 6 seconds. It's an amazing, it's all there. It doesn't need to be elaborated upon. You can see it with your own eyes. You see Kennedy get a hit in the throat, then you see Kennedy get a hit in the back, then you see him essentially get a hit from the front. When he gets the hit from the front, which is the fourth or the fifth or the sixth shot, he goes back into the left. That's the basic evidence. You see a man fly back because he gets hit right here.
I'll just pause it there. You're listening to Oliver Stone talking to Amy Goodman about the Kennedy assassination and his views and his research. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's a pleasure to be talking to you today. We'll be right back after this short break. Do not go away. Truth News Radio. Been playing some clips in relation to the Kennedy assassination. Of course, we're coming up to that fateful anniversary date, 22nd of November. And I will be talking about this a fair bit over the next few weeks. So I hope it's a subject you find interesting. I certainly do. And I do remind you that in the second hour of today's show, we have a very important interview coming up with Karen Hudez, former senior counsel at the World Bank and whistleblower who has revealed quite shocking corruption from within that organisation and is doing a lot to try and address some of the deepest problems that we have in the world financial system today. Now, I'm going to play to you a little more from this clip of Oliver Stone speaking to Amy Goodman. Then I'm going to switch to another interview that Luke Radowski did with Oliver Stone. Now, I just want to draw your attention to the fact that the point he makes there about the visual evidence from the Zapruder film being so important because it says it all, it shows it all. And, you know, this is what people who've studied 9/11 also say when they look at the video of the collapse of Building 7. Indeed, you know, Building 7 is the video of Building 7 is indeed like the Zapruder film of the 9/11 story. But isn't it strange that people like Oliver Stone just shy away from that? And you'll see that in the video that I'll play to you shortly. But it's certainly true. I mean, when we capture something like this on video, it does have a huge impact on evidence and on the way people perceive history. It's a very interesting parallel to think about the Zapruder film and think about the incredibly damning video that we have of Building 7 collapsing. It's the same type of evidence. So let me just continue now with Oliver Stone speaking to Amy Goodman.
Many witnesses at Parkland and at the autopsy in Bethesda saw a massive exit wound to the rear of his skull, to the right side. The people at Parkland, including the young Dr. McClellan, saw his cerebellum, his brain, go out, almost falling out of the back of his skull. Later, he gets taken illegally to the to Bethesda, Maryland. The military...
Why illegal?
What?
You said when he was taken illegally.
He's taken immediately. Within an hour or two, he started. But it takes 4 hours to fly there. Plus, the autopsy doesn't go off until later that evening. And it's manipulated. It's the doctors at the autopsy are not in charge of the autopsy. They're naval technicians, surgeons. The military is telling them what to do. And when this whole thing emerges, what we have are weird shots of the back of his head is patched up, basically. And the shot, they're trying to justify the shot from the rear to the front. So they're saying that the shot from the back came into his back and hit Connolly. They talk about three bullets. One missed. The magic bullet that was devised by Arlen Specter and others.
I'll just pause it there. I think you're already familiar with that. Of course, it seems Oliver Stone's a little bit confused there when he says illegally, that Kennedy was taken illegally to Bethesda Hospital. He then changes that to immediately. I don't know if there's a sign there that that Mr. Stone is having a little bit of trouble with his thought processes. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting to note that he did say illegally. Then when Amy Goodman questions him, he actually changes it to immediately. Anyway, I would like to now play to you the interview, the impromptu interview that Luke Radowski did with Oliver Stone, specifically about the need for a new inquiry into 9/11.
Martin Sheen and Woody Harrelson are working on a film to ask some of the questions that were never raised to the 9/11 investigation. They have many questions about the event. I was wondering, do you individuals have questions, and would you support the movie or a new investigation of 9/11?
There was an investigation, and there's a lot of damning evidence in it, but they didn't go all the way. But I don't think there's much to be gained from that. I think the larger issue is what Bush did with the initiatives he got and the chaos he created. We go into that in some length of the book.
Yeah, I think we need a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in the United States to explore the war crimes of the Bush administration and the ones that have been continued by Obama. I think that it's outrageous they've gotten off scot-free. Bradley Manning's in jail. I think we have an overcrowded prison system. If it's true that Petraeus has been somehow compromising intelligence, I think that he should replace Bradley Manning. Bradley Manning should be allowed to come out, and maybe Petraeus should take that jail space.
Thank you very much. The book is Untold, the History of the United States.
We'll just leave it there. I think that response there from Oliver Stone, incredibly tight-lipped, incredibly fidgety, really reflects some problem in his thought process. He jumps up from the table that he's sitting at. It's worth actually watching the clip, because the body language actually says far more than what he actually verbally says. As soon as Luke Radowski broaches this question about 9/11, Mr. Stone begins kind of scratching his chin and kind of looking around and looking away. He kind of does some very strange facial gestures, touching his face, and then he makes that very, very brief statement, and then he gets up and he starts to walk away. Clearly, he's scared. I mean, it looks like he's scared. Peter Kuznick, on the other hand, elaborates, but then you notice that that Oliver Stone is kind of looking at him from the side, and isn't happy even with this situation. Isn't happy. Now, I wish I could understand the full meaning of that, the full implication of that. But all I can tell you is that it's very sad, it's very disappointing. It shows that the forces at work are powerful and scary enough that someone like Oliver Stone is afraid to talk about it. I mean, he comes across looking arrogant, but I think behind that arrogance is actually fear. And it could be on his part mainly fear that if he was to say something on camera off the cuff that was genuine, that this would get into the media, as of course it does, and that he then might not be able to make movies anymore. And isn't that, you know, look, folks, we can't. I mean, this is a man incredibly successful. This is a man very rich. And he's scared. He's scared to talk about 9/11. Amy Goodman is scared to talk about 9/11. She's willing to talk about the Kennedy assassination. And yet, you know, the parallels there, the creation of the false narrative, the video evidence that's so compelling, all of the evidence that contradicts the official story. And this is why people who are 9/11 truthers will never give up, you know, because we know that we are actually we are on the track of something here that is absolutely massive. And it's not just this one event, it's the pattern that is repeated again and again. I could have brought up the case of Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma bombing. Again, you know, we saw the pattern there of a patsy who had been in the Marines, who was clearly working covertly on an intelligence level, who was then set up to be the patsy. Of course, it wasn't quite the same. McVeigh wasn't bumped off. He didn't need to be bumped off. He was actually groomed to the point where he, in fact, enjoyed it. See, the people who are doing this kind of stuff, the people who are manipulating, the people who are creating patsies, who are doing false flags, are getting better and better at it. So we have to understand that it's not always going to be exactly the same pattern, but you're going to see the underlying template is the same. It just gets more and more sophisticated over time. Okay, I'm going to play one more clip for you today, which is on a completely different topic, and we are almost at the end of the show, so I won't really have time to elaborate upon it. I may do so in later shows. This is the clip from the Q&A show, the ABC Q&A show, which has certainly been going around on YouTube a bit, and it features Dan Savage, the gay activist, promoting the idea of forced abortion. Now, there are just so many aspects to this that need to be raised and need to be discussed. I think I will be doing a whole show on this just to kind of deprogram, to kind of emotionally kind of cleanse from having listened to the show. I watched the whole thing. I will be putting a link to the entire Q&A program on our website, but I'll just play to you the most shocking part of it, which came right at the end here. From the gay activist Dan Savage in response to a question from a member of the audience.
Which so-called dangerous idea do you each think would have the greatest potential to change the world for the better if it were implemented?
Dan, let's start with you.
Oh, my God.
You got to give us a minute to think about that.
Population control. There's too many goddamn people on the planet. And I don't know if that's a... You know, I'm pro-choice. I believe that women should have the right to control their bodies. Sometimes in my darker moments, I'm anti-choice. I think abortion should be mandatory for about 30 years. That's a dangerous idea. She wanted a dangerous idea. So throw a chair at me.
That is a very dangerous idea.
I actually have to think...
Now, I'd just like to point out that the audience during this program was incredibly stacked in favor of Dan Savage. Practically any time he says anything, you get this giant applause and cheering from the crowd. It looks like the ABC audience was heavily stacked with gay activists. The man, Dan Savage, says a lot of quite offensive things during that show, which it needs to be examined, it needs to be analyzed. I don't want to just go off about it. I want to actually deconstruct it. And we'll be doing that in another show. Meanwhile, stay tuned for the next hour. I've got Karen Hudez, a very, very important person, coming on to talk about the global financial system and the World Bank and the corruption that she exposed. Stay with us after this break.